Well, 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 look what we have here. Yep, that's right, it's Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry. Hello, everyone! Welcome to this here electronic engineering podcast, brought to you by EEJournal.com, and hosted by yours truly, Amelia Dalton. Yep, we're talking about how we can make our smart systems a whole lot smarter, from some super cool new analog IP to our enterprise IoT infrastructure. So let's start things off with some revolutionary analog IP with Agile Analog. What makes their IP so groundbreaking? You'll just have to listen to find out.
My guest today is Tim Ramsdale from Agile Analog. Thank you so much for joining me, Tim.
Thanks very much. Great to talk to you.
Okay, so first off, for my audience who may not know, what are you guys all about?
So we're a revolutionary new analog IP company. So we develop analog IP, predefined circuits, but we've got a unique way of doing it. So instead of designing it all by hand, we have the computer design analog circuits, which means we're able to turn analog circuits in anywhere between 2 weeks and a month, where the standard is closer to 2.5-3 months.
Okay, so let's talk about your different flavors of flexible IP. Tell me what exactly we're looking at here.
So we're aiming to deliver customized IP. So particularly in the general purpose IP space, every customer has a slightly different requirement. And it's really hard to service that requirement using a traditional methodology because every single piece of IP ends up being different. That is our forte. So we've got three major flavors of IP on the power management side. So at the moment we have LDO regulators and we've got voltage references. We're able to deliver them on any process that you can imagine. So we are process agnostic. Our recipes are put together without reference to the process, and then the circuits are built by computer from the ground up in order to be optimized for that process. So every SoC these days cares about power management. Standby power consumption is so critical. So if you have an always-on voltage island, you're going to need an LDO to drive it. You need a voltage reference. We have a bunch of data converters and sensing functionality. These are great for IoT devices, for example. So we have a A to D converter. We've got a flavor that we've launched already up to about 20 megahertz. We've got a second flavor that's coming later in the year. We've got general purpose DAC, which is great for generic purposes, LED driving or driving output motors, that sort of thing. And then we've also got a set of comparators, which work really well together with our temperature sensor and our voltage reference. So you can trigger events at certain temperatures or certain voltages, which is great for security style applications, where you're potentially detecting sideband attacks. Finally, we've got our timing range. So at the moment, that's a free-running clock, which allows you to monitor perhaps an on-chip clock or drive your entire chip without having any crystal. But stay tuned because we've got more products coming there later in the year.
I love it. Now, a little birdie earlier told me that your company has a lot of ex-ARM executives. So why did a bunch of old ARM guys start an analog company?
That's a really great question, actually. So the inventor of the technology actually wasn't from ARM, but our chairman, Pete Hutton, is ex-ARM. I spent 4 years at ARM running the imaging and vision group at ARM, and before that managing the engineering team for GPUs. We also have a non-exec director who's from ARM, and our head of sales is former ARM. For us, it's a really interesting blend because our experience from ARM was one of the first companies that really worked out how to make money out of IP and how to service the market in a really scalable way. And that's what we think we're able to do with analog IP now, which makes it a really nice blend. I actually started off my career as an analog designer, so I just had a sort of a 15-year diversion into multimedia, but I came back to analog at the end.
All right, it is time for your off-the-cuff question, Tim. So you have one meal left on planet Earth. That's it. That's all you're going to eat for the rest of your life. What would it be?
Wow, that's a great question. So I'm going to have to say sushi. I just absolutely love sushi, and that's why I come to California. No, I come to California to talk to customers, but I love sushi too, and I love eating Californian sushi. So that's what it would be.
And Tim, that's actually my answer to that question too.
Fantastic. Yeah. Now, well, we should go out for dinner together. There you go. Absolutely. But we're having sushi. So, yeah.
Excellent, Tim. Well, this was a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for taking the time, Amelia. Cheers.
Let's keep on making our smart systems smarter, all right? Please welcome Tom Yates from Nubix. Tom and I are talking about edge-native infrastructure and how we can all use that information coming at us from the edge a whole lot better. Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, Amelia. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so we are here today to talk about analytics, the edge, and how we can move around this massive amount of data that's coming at us these days. But before we dive into the details, where do you think we are right now in terms of the edge?
The adoption of edge computing is much slower than people had anticipated, I think. Edge is closely associated with things like digital transformation and a few other enterprise topics that really haven't gotten there much beyond a foothold. And we think that there are a variety of reasons for that, mostly around the enterprise architecture and the current enterprise architecture being very cloud-based and not totally compatible with true edge-based computing.
So, Tom, what do you think is truly holding us back from utilizing all of this information from the edge?
One of the things that we see that is really holding the edge computing space and edge analytics back is there's a giant skill set mismatch between what enterprise organizations have in their developer skill set and the skill set that's required on edge devices. If we dig into that a little bit, your cloud-based computing uses a ton of microservices and a ton of easy-to-use development tools for automating build processes and deployment processes, and those simply don't exist in edge computing. On the edge, what developers are worried about is integrating at the very lowest level of the system with things like the I2C bus or Modbus or CAN bus, things that enterprise application developers have never heard of. And likewise, edge developers are working on chipsets, and they're developing in C and C++, trying to meet very, very tiny memory constraint requirements for those devices, which in the cloud-based world simply don't exist. So there's a giant mismatch between those two groups of developers, and that's one of the reasons why the enterprise developers aren't really able to get to the edge. And the edge guy, there's a very difficult time communicating between those two groups or getting any of the analytics that we've developed in the cloud to be able to execute on an edge device.
So there's been a term thrown around lately called edge native infrastructure, and I'm not exactly sure what all that entails.
Yeah, so edge native is a term that we use at my organization, Nubix, to talk about applications that are designed to run on the edge. And so these are applications that are designed to fit in tiny memory spaces that we talked about, able to do some of the cloud-based development processes that people are used to, like container-based deployment of objects and container-based updates of code, and the ability to actually process the data on the actual edge device, as opposed to sending data from an edge device to a gateway or even to a cloud for processing. So the key requirements are container-based deployment and the ability to actually do the analytic and the data processing on the edge device where the data is generated itself.
Now, this is all in Nubix's wheelhouse, right? What is Nubix doing in particular to help embedded designers in this space?
Sure. Nubix is designed to help people to make it easy to develop and deploy IoT applications. And we do that through a couple of different ways. The first is we have developed the industry's first edge-native containers. These tiny containers run on all kinds of different platforms, from x86 to your ARM A-class to ARM M-class devices, but they're way tinier than your standard Linux containers, 1/100th the size or even smaller than standard Linux containers, which give them the ability to run on these tiny, tiny devices. The other thing that we've done is create a set of tiny services that developers can use to accelerate application development. An example of the tiny services will be some data management capabilities. For example, store and forward semantics. We have a tiny service that you just add to your application, and it keeps track of what data has been forwarded to a cloud-based server and what data hasn't. And it's all automatic to the application developer. They don't have to worry about at least once, at most once, messaging semantics, which are quite complicated. That's all handled behind the scenes. Another type of tiny service that we have enabled for application developers are some analytics, so that they can just take data from a sensor and send it to an analytic that's pre-developed and get some insight or some inference from that actual, you know, raw data without having to do a whole lot of coding on their own. The combination of these tiny containers and tiny services make it very easy for application developers to rapidly put together an application that reads data from a sensor, analyzes it, and then connects some output of that analysis to a machine for control purposes or to a cloud for, you know, observability purposes or both.
Okay, so let's talk about AI at the edge. Now, what is Nubix doing in this arena in particular?
Yeah, as far as AI at the edge is concerned, Nubix has a couple of things that we've done. The one is we have supported a open source project called Steward, which is a tiny version of Spark, so that developers have access to Spark-like semantics while developing edge applications. And in our testing, we've been able to fit tiny Spark applications for inferencing in as low as 32K devices, which is just fascinating. The other thing that we're doing is just at the container level, having the ability with our analytics to bring analytics in from a variety of different places. So we're, you know, ML agnostic. We don't care what you use to develop your ML. But once you've got your ML algorithm for inferencing, you can package that up inside Nubix as a container and then deploy that ML inferencing component to the edge using our technology.
Excellent. Okay, Tom, I think it is time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, I know you're a bit of a golfer, like I am as well, so two-part question. Number one, what's the coolest place you've ever gone golfing? And two, what's better, your short game or your long game?
So the coolest place I've ever golfed, I've had the benefit or the luck or whatever you want to call it of having played at Pebble Beach. So I think most people would say that's the coolest place I played. But I actually think the coolest place I played is this tiny little course in tucked in San Francisco's McLaren Park called Glen Eagles. It's a little 9-hole course, very much in the Scottish tradition. It's a hidden gem in San Francisco. Now, what's better, my long game or my short game? My short game by far. I really enjoy the little intricacies of that come with the short game and all the different shots that you get to work and kind of controlling the ball that way.
That sounds super cool. And yes, my short game is much better than my long game as well. Well, Tom, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
All right. Well, thank you for having me, Amelia. I was happy to be here.
Speaking of IoT, we all know that sensors for IoT applications are changing and evolving rapidly these days. With experts predicting over a trillion sensors deployed worldwide, the pace of innovation in sensor technology has been accelerating, and we engineers need to keep pace with the latest trends in order to get the best out of our IoT designs. In a recent episode of Chalk Talk called Trends Driving the Future of Sensor Development, I sit down with Pete Smith of TE Connectivity and talk all about the latest trends in sensor technology. And you can check out this episode by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, by heading on over to the Chalk Talk section of EE Journal. You can't miss it. It's right across the top. Or head on over to YouTube. Keyword EE Journal. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, my personal Twitter account is AmeliaD1978. And if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, keyword EE Journal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of super cool techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series, hosted by yours truly. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can check out the Fish Fry archive or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, I love that stuff, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of September 27th, 2019, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.